Hello and welcome to this podcast. I am Angie DeRosa, Senior Editor of Contemporary OBGYN. Today we are here with Dr. Christina Hahn, the Division Director of Maternal Fetal Medicine at the University of California, Los Angeles, and a member of the COVID Task Force there. She also is an active member of the Society for Maternal Fetal Medicine and is here with us today on behalf of SMFM to discuss the current state of COVID in the US and California, where she practices, the current state of COVID vaccines in pregnant individuals, and among other topics, vaccine hesitancy, plus her tips from bedside and community on vaccines. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Hahn.
Thank you, Angie and Dr. Spong, for this opportunity for Society for Maternal Fetal Medicine to speak on this very timely and important topic. My goals for this podcast is to really distill down the important tidbits of information that we have available on COVID in pregnancy and on COVID vaccine in pregnancy. And to do so, I'm going to take us through the course of the current epidemiology in the country and in my region, and then I'll segue into the effects on pregnancy and end with a longer discussion on what we know about the vaccine and hopefully give everyone some practical facts and tips on counseling. So let's start off with the 10,000 feet view of the current state of COVID. And these are numbers that are going to change by next week. But in the US so far, we've had a total of 37.5 million cases of COVID since this started. And that has led to 626,000 deaths. This is in the general population. With California, we have had a large number of those. So a total number of over 4 million cases with 65,000 deaths. That's about a 1.6 death per thousand rate. Now, if we hone in further to my specific region, Los Angeles County, we've had over 1 million cases and 25,000 deaths. In terms of the waves, we've all seen waves come across the country. We've had waves here in Los Angeles in July, August, then again in December, January, and now are in our third big wave, and that's rapidly increasing. If we focus in on the pregnant individuals, so far in LA, we've had over 11,000 pregnant women test positive for COVID-19 since the start of the pandemic, and unfortunately have had 12 pregnant women pass away from COVID-19. Just recently, we are now seeing an increase of 300% over the last few weeks of pregnant women coming down with COVID, and this is largely due to the Delta variant and also with the school season starting up. Within the LA population, those who are testing positive are predominantly Latinx. Over 70% are Latinx individuals. And so we are doing targeted outreach into those communities. We also have smaller percentages in the Caucasian, African American, Asian, and basically all ethnic groups. So with that background, let's segue into what we know about COVID in pregnancy so far. What we know tried and true now is that pregnancy is an independent risk factor for severe COVID-19 disease. And so I always talk about this as being two ways to look at this. If we take pregnant individuals with COVID-19 and compare them to non-pregnant individuals with COVID-19, what we see is a threefold increase in ICU admissions, mechanical ventilation, a 2.5-fold increase in needing ECMO, so the heart-lung machine, and a 1.7 increase fold in risk of death. But that's not really the true question here. What we really should be asking is, how does a pregnant individual with COVID-19 look compared to the pregnant individual without COVID-19? Because that's truly the question. And this is where the astounding facts are. There's an over 18-fold increase in need of ICU admission. There's a 1.5-fold increase in need for preterm delivery, and a 3-fold increase in mortality. And that's not even counting the increased rate of cesarean delivery, preterm birth, the medical resources of ICU admission for pregnant individuals, and the placental abnormalities that are now known. So who are at most risks? Even among the pregnant individuals, there is stratification that can be done. And so additional risk factors for pregnant women becoming severely ill are body mass index greater than 35, having diabetes, heart disease, being over than older than 35, being Latinx, Hispanic, Black, and anyone who is affected by the social determinants of health. So with that, we then move on to the vaccine discussion, because this, at this point, severe COVID-19 is really a preventable disease. And that's why vaccine is such an important discussion. So who in the US has gotten COVID vaccine while pregnant so far? And so far, the CDC V-Safe in pregnancy data shows that we've had over 148,000 vaccinated pregnant individuals. And it's really thanks to these initial individuals who said, yes, we understand that there's not a plethora of data, but we're willing to get the vaccine anyways. Thanks to these individuals, we now have the data to be able to counsel everyone else. The CDC is also actively tracking about 5,000 individuals to follow out their pregnancies. So let's start first by just some general counseling about how the vaccine works, because our patients are going to ask these things. So what we know is that the vaccine contains, depending on which type of vaccine, genetic material that encodes the spike protein that allows the viruses to gain entry into the cell. So the analogy for this that I give patients is that this is sort of like the blueprint. It's the Lego manual that allows you to put together the structure that you want to make. To help people understand exactly how little genetic material this is, there are over 360,000 mRNA molecules in each of our cells. We are simply adding one more to that. And it is truly the only active ingredient within the vaccine. The mRNA material never enters the nucleus of the cell where our DNA is stored. And once that viral protein is made, the instruction manual then self-destructs. And so this material is out of our body within days. So what do we know so far about how these vaccines are working in terms of non-pregnant individuals and then in pregnant individuals? We know that the vaccine is going to decrease the chance that the individual will get COVID, and also, more importantly, that they'll get very ill from the infection. A full vaccination is considered to be in effect 2 weeks after your second dose of the mRNA vaccine. And the analogy I give patients for this is particular for Southern California. It's sort of like sunblock and rash guard. When you're at the beach and you put on sunblock, that's sort of like putting on your mask. But if you want additional protection, you put a rash guard on. And with those two things, you will not get sunburned. And that's a similar way of looking at COVID vaccine in pregnancy. The general efficacy for the mRNA vaccines is about 94 to 95% after the two doses. We know that with the Delta variant coming about that there is some decreased efficacy, but even then we're still talking about 88% efficacy. Now, so far I haven't talked very much about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. The efficacy for that is a little bit lower, and it's a little bit less discussed in pregnant individuals because of the risk of the cerebral embolism. And so because of that thromboembolic event, what the Society for Maternal-Fetal Medicine and American College of OBGYN are currently saying is that when possible, mRNA is a preferred route for pregnant individuals, but if no other vaccine is available, the risk of cerebral venous sinus thrombosis is low enough that pregnant individuals can also get the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Now, there have been observational studies done in Israel where the vaccine campaign has been very successful. And what they've shown is that the adjusted hazard ratio for the vaccinated individuals is 0.22, meaning that you're 78% less likely to get COVID-19 infection once you've gotten the vaccine. So one of the questions we get from patients is, why not wait for the natural infection? Why not have COVID parties where everyone gets infected? And the reality is that vaccines are really more effective because it's a targeted approach. When you have a natural COVID-19 infection, your body is simply too busy trying to defend everything else that it cannot hone in on that targeted S protein. And in addition, there's also collateral damage that happens when you allow a natural infection to happen. And that's collateral damage within the affected individual's body and also just in the community in terms of spread. So then the next question is, how do we know it's safe? Again, the CDC is very closely tracking pregnant individuals who've gotten COVID. And just last week, a paper was put out from the COVID-19 pregnancy registry team at the CDC. And what they said is that the calculated proportion of miscarriage, preterm birth, and in small for gestational age fetuses or neonates in persons who are vaccinated against COVID-19 looks exactly the same as those who are pregnant prior to the COVID pandemic. So what this is showing is that there's no increased risk with the COVID-19 vaccine, no red flags in terms of pregnancy in the vaccine. Another question we're going to be getting is the boosters. When will boosters become available for pregnant individuals, and is it recommended? As of right now, the CDC does not have pregnant individuals on the booster list yet. So currently, it's only for moderate and severely immunocompromised individuals, but the expectation is that this will be coming down the pipeline for pregnant individuals also. Now, whenever we think about vaccine hesitancy, which really is what all of us are facing right now, a good way to think about the different buckets of concerns that patients have is to think about the three C's. That's complacency, confidence, and convenience. So if we think about complacency, it's the individual who comes and says, COVID-19 does not affect me. It's not dangerous. It's not going to get into my household because I'm quarantining. As I mentioned, we already know otherwise. COVID-19 does affect pregnant women, and it affects pregnant women more severely so. So I'm hoping the data that we shared at the beginning is something that you can take to your pregnant individuals. The other question we hear is, well, how is COVID-19 different than the flu vaccine? The government's never really cared whether or not I get a flu vaccine, so why should I get a COVID-19 vaccine? And the difference is that this is a virus that's novel, as the name says. It's novel to all of us. And so during most flu seasons, there's enough vaccinated individuals and individuals who've had flu in the past to achieve herd immunity, which slows the spread and decreases the resources that are being asked of the medical system. This is completely not true for COVID-19. In the US so far, we only have 50% vaccinated across the country. And that is, of course, is widely heterogeneous based on the geopolitical divides. And so there are areas where there is not herd immunity, and that's where each individual really is incumbent upon them to get their own vaccines to protect themselves, i.e. to put on your rash guard. The second bucket are the confidence. So when patients say, well, I don't trust the vaccine companies or the CDC or the politicians, how do we get through that? And this is really where the providers, the ones who are sitting one-on-one with the patients, are really important. It's incumbent upon us to really spread the word, to take these facts and memorize them so that when a patient asks, what data do you have it ready to go. It's also important as for us as obstetrical leaders to reach out to the communities, because talking one-on-one is not going to get us far enough. We have to talk to the cultural groups in the region, the media, journalists, spread the word on social media so that we can get the data out there, because this is a lot of literature that's even hard for providers to understand. We can't expect our patients to be able to understand to that level of data analysis. We also have to fight the historical vaccine anxiety. I live in an area where there is historically a lot of anxiety about those initial studies on MMR vaccine and autism. And those are myths that we continue to try to debunk. And the last category is the convenience. The I don't have time, I've got other kids I need to take care of, I can't get to it, I can't afford it, I can't understand it. And so this is where we need to systematically remove barriers to vaccination. And that means providing it at every entry point possible. On the outpatient side, inpatient labor and delivery, the antepartum service, postpartum service, at the pediatrician's clinic, whatever we can do to make this vaccine available to everyone, the more likely we will be able to get vaccinated, get pregnant individuals vaccinated. And we also need to remove all of those social determinants of health, bring the vaccine out to the communities, to speak to the community leaders, the religious leaders about all of this data to get everybody on board and to understand. And then lastly, I'm just going to close with this concept of compassion fatigue. We've all been doing this for a very long time. We are all tired of it. We all want to take those 10 extra minutes we're spending counseling about vaccines and bring it home to our own families. So it's really important to remind everyone to take a deep breath whenever a patient starts asking you these questions, because you might be the one individual to make that difference in that individual. To not be combative, so to speak, when talking to them, despite how tired we are from talking to everyone else. And also to remember to take care of yourselves as we continue forward through this, because you really are the front line and are the solution to these problems that we continue to face, you know, a year and a half into this pandemic. So thank you for the time for listening. And again, thank you to Mr. Rosa and to Dr. Spong and Contemporary OBGYN Editorial Board for inviting us to speak.
Thank you so much, Dr. Han. I know our audience will get so much from hearing this perspective.